The crimes, the criminals, why did they do it? Who got hurt? Did they meet justice or commit the perfect crime? You'll find all the clues at Jim Harold's Crime Scene.
Welcome to The Crime Scene. I'm Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again, and I certainly appreciate it. And I appreciate our guest. He's probably been on this show more than anybody, just because he keeps writing interesting books. Always, you know, a pretty heavy subject matter, and this one is no exception. It's called In Chains, The Dangerous World of Human Trafficking, and the author is Alan R. Warren, along with R.J. Parker. Alan, I know you do the radio show, you do many of these books, and you've had a great deal of success with it. Why did you decide to turn your attention to this sad world of human trafficking?
Well, to be real honest, I didn't. Actually, what happened was RJ came to me and brought it up. And I was kind of, it sounds interesting. And he kind of, pushed me a little bit. It was probably about 6 months. And then I finally said, okay, well, I'll start doing some research. And it's one of those when you start talking to people and getting involved in cases with people that have been trafficked, it really draws you in. It's something that it's just, I can't say enough. You get more and more involved and it just pulls you in. And all of a sudden, here it is, there's so much to write about.
So, I mean, this seems to have gotten greater recognition lately. We're hearing a lot more about it. Now, is it just the recognition is increasing, or is the actual trafficking increasing, or is it both?
A little bit of both. The increase in the actual trafficking is not anything different. It's going up probably about the 2-3% average that it always has been. But for some reason, the media has been more involved and doing more about it and talking more about it, which I can't really tell you why, because I'm sort of surprised in a sense, because there's so much going on in the world. Not that this isn't important, but for this to kind of start coming out of the left wing, so to speak, it's just kind of, it was surprising to me.
Now, is this something, a lot of times here, you're up in Canada, I'm here in America, North America, we think we're safe from some of these things. These are things that happen other places. But I'm assuming you found that that's not true.
Oh, by far not true. Because for the most part, some of the worst offenses in the trafficking has been organ trafficking and sex trafficking. And it's countries like the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. that are the largest in demand. So they're buying more of this than anywhere else. So in a lot of cases like the organ trafficking where we're buying livers and different body parts, it's the rich people in our countries that are buying them. So they're creating the demand. And whether it's taken by force or whether people are willingly selling their body parts, that happens in other countries mainly. It's not like they're taking people off the street in the States here or Canada. It's just readily available in poor countries and countries that legalize the ability to sell. So we're just sort of creating the demand. We have the money and the ability to buy these things and even the sex trafficking. So,
I mean, how is this allowed to happen? How do the syndicates, I assume, that control this, how do they work and how do they go undetected? I mean, this would seem like such an in-your-face kind of offense that it couldn't exist in the modern world. How does it happen?
Well, as in organ trafficking itself, the U.S. is probably the largest consumer or buyer of that product. Because it's privatized, when you have the privatized medical systems, you can have doctors in a private hospital treating a fairly rich person who needs some organ. And rather than waiting, they pay them. And these medical facilities and doctors are just buying what they need to fill their requirement for the rich person coming in. And they get away with it a lot. The FBI, I have one report there that the FBI did catch a group of doctors and medical centers that were doing this. But it's going on way more than they can handle. Like the FBI will never be able to cover even a tenth of what's going on. So in cases like that, there's nobody to really watch this. So it goes on totally unregulated. When you get to sex trafficking, that's different. But again, it's left alone. And it just happens in waves. Like the one when we were finishing the book, that's what I talk about in the beginning about Bob Kraft, you know, New England Patriot owner, and how he got caught in that Orchids of Asia down in Florida. And it's the same sort of thing. But, you know, and nothing gets changed because someone like Bob Kraft will get a fine, probably won't show up in court ever. And nothing will happen, you know, and it'll be a small fine, you know, $500,000. This is a billionaire. It's not nothing. The owner of the place, actually, in this particular case, she has 20 other spas that offer the same services. She'll get maybe a $2,000, $3,000 fine and will continue to operate these other services. And the people that get hurt are the people being trafficked. You know, all the girls from China that they had trapped in these places get arrested, charged, and within 6 months go back, get deported back to China with a record where now they're shunned in their home country. They're the ones that actually get kind of, you know, treated the worst throughout the whole process, and everybody else continues on. So, I don't know what I can say about it. It's just sort of, you're just watching this cycle go on and on.
And a question on that, because I'm not clear, I've not been following it that closely. Has it been established 100% that those were sex workers working against their will at that spa with Kraft? Has that been firmly established?
Well, you know, the legal system will not spend enough money to really go 100%. The difficulty is that, you know, these girls, most of them have come from China. Most of them don't speak English or very little. They were living 15 people to a room with a hot plate. If they weren't being held against their will, they had terrible living conditions and they weren't supposed to be in the country. I don't know. And most of them come up with the saying that, you know, well, we were promised a job working in a spa and they would get us American citizenship. And when they got there, it was something different. And they're usually told that they have to work off the debt for being brought to the States and given the job and a place to live. And which, you know, they'll never pay that off. It's something outrageous. You know, they get told they're $50,000 or something for the, and so they're working. And so either process, whether they think they're working for their freedom or whether they're being held, the legal system won't go that far. They'll just charge them with soliciting sex and deport them. You know, they're not going to spend the money on that.
That particular case aside, I'll say this. I have always, people can decide for themselves if there's moral value in prostitution or in sex work. I'm not going to get into that debate. That's up to people's personal morality. I've always kind of felt, until I started to think about this angle of human trafficking, I always thought, well, two consenting adults, as long as they're adults and they're not hurting anybody else and it's an exchange. Just for the record, I've never gone down that avenue. Either way, I've not, I've not sold myself or vice versa. But the point, and right now, well, never mind. Anyway, the point being that I used to be of the thought, two consenting adults, what's the problem? Not that I believe that it's particularly the greatest thing in the world to do, but again, I'm kind of a live and let live kind of person. As long as you're not, you know, it's the old, you know, your right to throw a punch ends at my nose. If you're not hurting anybody, hey, have fun. I don't care. But the more that I hear about this human trafficking, it sounds like one side of that equation many, many times is not consenting. And that's a huge, huge problem.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem. I think that you're right. You know, we're supposed to be in a free country. And as adults, we're supposed to be able to live free, you know, pay our taxes and let's not break any laws. And if anything, help each other. You know, so if that be the case, then if two adults want to enter a contract like that, I agree. I'll let them. But the problem with these is that a lot of these cases, they're not adults, first off, and they're foreign and they don't speak English and they don't know the culture and they're brought to a country and they're really out of place. So they're at a, you know, they're really under pressure to perform, so to speak. And I think it's, you know, that's where it's bad. And that's what we need to be taking care of. Not just two adults meeting somewhere and one dropping a $50 bill after they had an encounter. We're talking about someone that's quite often underage, and they shouldn't be in that position.
Not at all. And personally, I believe that anybody that exploits a child underage for sexual purposes or otherwise belongs in a special place in hell.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, as a parent and just as I hope a caring human being, I just, there are a few things that make me more upset than that. It's just a horrible, horrible thought. Now, I want to go back to this organ thing because this is really disturbing. So the picture you're painting, let's say I'm a wealthy entrepreneur and I have a failing liver or I have a failing kidney or a failing heart, whatever the case may be. I call a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy and presto changeo, I've got a new heart to be put in and, you know, it just fell off of the back of a truck. Is that basically the picture that you're painting?
Well, it's a lot better. It's a lot better organized. We actually have organ brokers, they call them. And there's broker-friendly hospitals and clinics. And the doctors are, some of them stay out of it, but they perform the surgery and some of them are involved. So the recent case with the FBI, of course, doctors were involved, but I think there was 40 of them in all. So what happens is these organ brokers are international. And they have connections with these broker-friendly hospitals, and so yeah, you, Jim Harold walks into one of these hospitals and said and needs a transplant of some sort. You don't want to wait, or waiting would be really, you know, it might threaten your life. You will shell out $150,000 to $200,000 to get that organ. And the hospital will arrange with the broker and get that for you and perform the surgery for you. And then you leave and everything goes on like normal. And that's sort of the problem. So it's much better organized. It's not like just falling off a truck.
Yeah, that is just disturbing. And this has been, yeah. I take it, going on for quite a while.
Oh, yeah, quite a while. That's why it's so well developed. I mean, right now, I put prices in the books. You know, right now, a kidney is going for $262,000 American average. People are buying eyes for $1,500. They're buying spleen, parts of the stomach. You know, small intestines are $2,500. I was surprised. A liver is about $150,000. You know, and even a heart, you know, it surprised me because it was only $120,000. So it's one of the cheaper body parts you can get. And so this might sound like, oh, well, who's being hurt? Well, what's being hurt is way back in another country, like Ethiopia or things like that. the government has allowed their people to sell body parts. And so they're selling their body parts to these brokers who end up giving them to these clinics and hospitals. And so that's one level. And the other one is some of them are being, which I put quite a few in there, and quite a bit in the Eastern Bloc part of Europe, people are actually being taken and forcibly having organs removed. And that's the most terrifying one. And I put, there's a story of a guy that was from the UK that was studying in a university, and that's what happened. And, you know, next thing he knows, he wakes up in his apartment and someone's operated on him and taken a body part out of him. So that's where people are getting hurt.
So why is it allowed, and you can address on both sides of the aisle, the organ side and the sex trafficking side. Why is this allowed to continue? I mean, obviously, if you, Alan Warren, along with RJ Parker, you're aware of it, it's in the media, we know it's happening. Why is it not stopped?
You know, it's kind of a big question. I don't know that there's an answer. I think one problem is there's a lot of international, there's countries that are involved that don't always coordinate with other countries. So that's one issue. The other is the amount that we spend on our law enforcement and with FBI and how much they want to contribute to something like this. Again, now that it's getting a media attention, it's starting to gain more focus and you might see more, arrests going on, and you might start to hear more about it in the news because of that. So that, you know, the book in a sense was put out to really bring awareness to this sort of issue. And hopefully, you know, other people also contribute. You know, we need more media attention. That seems to get things done better than anything else.
So that is the key, you think. You think the key here is to get the word out more in the media and shine a spotlight on this.
Yeah, for the most part. You know, it concerns me, especially in the United States, because of the amount that so many wealthy people have so much power. And, you know, that worries me because that's the demand. It's not like you and me. The truth is, like, people like average people like you and me, and even most of the listeners here, are not the type to go out to a friendly hospital like that and try to buy some liver illegally. That for the most part, we don't have the money and the resources or the, you know, the connections to do that. We're talking about people that are in the upper class that have a lot of money. And that's the ones, because even getting back to the Bob Kraft thing, not that I'm picking on him, but, you know, here's a billionaire that will pay a couple hundred dollars in a fine and can just go about life and nothing's going to change. Not that he should get the whole weight of the problem put on him, but that's sort of the scenario. The people that are actually buying the organs or are getting the sex work like this are still going to get it, even if we do get attention. So I just, it's just one of those things. I don't know. I can't give an answer, I guess, what I'm saying, but bringing attention is the only thing I can do.
Now, do you think, and then this is really maybe getting a little conspiratorial, but do you think maybe some of the reason it's allowed to continue is that some of the people who could help stop it or maybe partaking in some of these horrid practices?
I wouldn't normally, because I'm you know, I've been through tons of conspiracies with lots of people and interviews and books, and if anything, I'm a little bit more skeptical than I used to be. You know, 10 years ago I was all in, but now I'm so I don't want to. I'm not going to start throwing that it's, you know, the Koch brothers or George Soros and all this sort of stuff. I mean, what, you know, I think that humans just do these things, and with money comes power. And I don't know that there's a big plan conspiracy. You know, it's, you know, anything like that. And I certainly saw no evidence of that. I just think it's pretty simple. You have a couple of $1 billion. This is what you want. You buy it. And you have great legal assistance to stop anything from happening to you. And you have connections. And I think that's what comes with having all that money and power. And I don't know that there's really anything conspiratorial. You know, there's a lot of, you know, around Facebook and stuff, you see tons of the lady that owned this Orchids of Asia spa in Jupiter, Florida, I think it was. You know, there's all these pictures of her at the White House with Donald Trump. I mean, and there's all sorts of stuff going around. But, you know, what does that mean? You know, some if people that don't like him will jump on and say, obviously he's involved and he's behind it. And others, you know, it's, I don't know. I don't see any evidence of that. I think they're all just working for their own profits.
How can we protect our loved ones? I mean, I know you said much of this stems from the third world. But for those of us who are not from there, and I feel so sorry for those people as well. I don't want to minimize what they're going through with these kind of things, because it's just as tragic if somebody gets kidnapped from mainstream USA. A life is a life. But for people listening to this show, is there something that we can do to protect ourselves, or possibly if we're worried about younger loved ones who would be targets of these kind of nefarious things, what are best practices to keep ourselves safe?
Well, the biggest thing going on in the States right now is teenage girls. And they meet a guy, they start dating, you know, and he's dreamy. He's everything that you'd want in a boyfriend type thing, is how they say it. But what they really are is traffickers. And we come across several girls like this, and there's several stories covering this that you can find out even on the internet and different news sources. And, you know, they meet a guy, they date him, and eventually the guy talks them into moving out of home and moving in with him. And what they do, as soon as they get them in their place, they change their looks, color their hair, take away their ID, and ship them to another city in part of a connection of this sort of trafficking. And all of a sudden, now they're being trafficked. This is like some 15-year-old girl that was just in high school and living at home 6 months before. So that's the biggest problem going on in the U.S., and that's the one we have to be aware of the most, that's closest to home. And, you know, other than being totally involved in who your children are, who they're around, I don't know what else there is, you know. That's a really tough one, because how many teenagers want to tell their parents everything, right?
Right. And the thing is, and I just recently interviewed Mark Olshaker. He's done a series of books with John Douglas, who is the inventor of FBI profiling, basically. And he kind of made a semi-joke. We were talking about all of this very seriously, but he said, I wouldn't want to be the teenage daughter of an FBI agent, because they've seen all these horrible things, for example, that serial killers do. But the point is that I don't know, as the, you know, as a parent myself, I'd rather err on the side of being a little too watchful and a little too concerned, because there's a lot of bad stuff out there. And yeah, it's a numbers game, and chances are your kid's going to be fine. But for my money, you know, you don't get a do-over with that stuff. So, you know, I say if a parent is paying a little more attention and maybe being a little paranoid, good on them, in my opinion, because there's reasons to be paranoid in this day and age.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there's, you know, we got to realize that the kids, you know, our kids have a totally different world they're living in. They have a totally different, people have so much more access to them through all this social media and their cell phones and that, you know, and that never happened when we were kids. That, you know, that just wasn't what it was going on. You know, if someone wanted to do something to you, they're kidnapping you on the street or in a park or doing something, right? It's now it's different. They can get right into your family's homes and lives and get more intimate into that through social media. So it's a new world, and I think we're all learning day to day on how we have to deal with this, you know. And the other aspect you have to look at is when you go out to a place that's a restaurant or some sort of service orientated business or a farm, they say it's very important to keep an eye out for people that look like they've been mistreated or they have certain aspects about them that seem, it just doesn't seem right. If you don't feel right about something, you should report it. And that's happened a few times in restaurants, believe it or not, in restaurants where they've, in the States, where they've actually gone and raided and find people that were being held and living in the back room and working for 12, 14 hour days. It's just, it's, and farms too. It's just, it's one of the worst places is the farms.
And that's another, one thing I wanted to mention, going back to the parental thing. I remember a few years ago, but pre smartphones, when the guidance was, when the internet had come out and they were on computers, but smartphones weren't around yet. I remember the guidance, put your family computer in a central location where you can watch which where young ones are doing. But now all the kids are carrying around smartphones. Now, again, my kids have smartphones, so I'm not saying they shouldn't have smartphones at a certain age, but they're carrying around those computers now. So I think it really makes parents up their game, because I think a kid is never going to tell you everything. I know I wouldn't have told my parents every single thing when I was a teenager, although I never hid anything horrible from my parents. But the point is I think parents almost have to have a better relationship with their kids today than ever, because there's more opportunities to conceal and the stakes are larger. So it really makes parents have to up their game. And I think in some ways, you know, now pioneer days, you had to have enough food on the table and kill, enough venison or something to feed the family. But in the modern age, I think this is one of the tougher times to parent, because there is the opportunity for a kid to kind of live a second life that you don't know about. And you got to hope that they value that relationship enough with you that they're going to be pretty straight with you and tell you what's going on.
Yeah. Oh, and that's totally it. And, you know, but I also have to throw in, you know, what we did was put several chapters in, and we started telling survivor stories. And so we have, you know, the survivor stories of my boyfriend sold me into sex slavery. That's very common. But I also have to throw in that also in the second part of the book in chapter 9, it's my father sold me into child labor. Oh. And that's it's a really Debbie Downer book here, because I'm supposed to be selling. The idea is that it's just to make you aware, but there's plenty of parents that are selling their kids too. So it's not just boyfriends, and it's just, yes. You know, like I said, and people in our age group, you know, we didn't grow up with this. So this is sort of, we're learning this. I don't know what the answer is to a lot of these questions, you know?
Well, I think knowledge, as you said, is the first step. On the back of the book here, it says it is estimated that $150 billion a year is generated in the forced labor industry alone. It's also believed that 21 million people are trapped in modern day slavery, exploited for sex, labor, or organs. Just absolutely horrible. It is a dark picture. The book is In Chains, The Dangerous World of Human Trafficking. Alan, where can people find the book and find all of your books and your radio show?
Well, the books, this one in particular, it's doing really well. It's in all bookstores and, of course, Amazon. And the rest of my books, some of them are and some of them aren't, but they're all on Amazon. And I have a website for the books, alanrwarren.com. And the radio show's houseofmystery.com. So it's pretty easy to find either one of them. And, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being a guest once again. I mean, it is a dark picture, but I think it's an important one that people need to see. They need to know that these things are happening. And hopefully, by shining that bright light, this will be eradicated. Alan Warren, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me and talking about the book.
Thank you for tuning into The Crime Scene. Indeed, this topic is disturbing, as are many of the things we delve into in The Crime Scene. But I think that it does provide a service in the sense to be forewarned is to be forearmed to protect ourselves and those we love. And I think we do a good job of that here. And the people who listen say they appreciate it very much. We don't have those huge numbers of the shows that maybe take more of an entertainment spin on all of this. But we're going to keep our approach going. And along that line, if you enjoy what I do on this show and our guests communicate, I would appreciate it if you would share the show. It's the only way we're going to get the word out. We don't have those big marketing dollars. So please share the show with like-minded people who are interested in the facts behind these crimes. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. And as always, be careful out there. Bye-bye.